Welcome to Redefine Ed, the podcast. I'm Travis Pillow. We've written a lot lately about the wave of innovation and rebirth that's been sweeping through Catholic education in the United States. Basically, in an effort to reverse decades of declining enrollment, schools all over the country have been restructuring, retooling their academics, taking advantage of new school choice programs where they're available, and serving larger numbers of low-income students. This matters a lot for the school choice movement, especially if we care about academic quality and innovation in private schools. It matters a lot for Catholic education in the United States, and frankly around the world, at a time when none other than Pope Francis has been calling on Catholic schools to redouble their efforts to serve more low-income students. And on this edition of the podcast, I'm speaking with Jill Kafka. She's the executive director of the Partnership Schools. That's a network of six Catholic schools in Harlem and the Bronx. The basic question we're asking today is this: if faith-based schools can improve results for low-income children, why shouldn't they be a part of the mix, alongside charters and traditional public schools that are also trying to improve? That's what we're talking about today. Hope you stay with us.
Hello and welcome to Redefine, your home for news about parental school choice and education reform.
So we've been looking around the country for examples of the what's been called the Catholic school renaissance. And one feature of the Catholic school renaissance is that there are schools that are Catholic schools, and a lot of them have long-standing traditions. Maybe they've been around for decades or even more than a century, and yet they're now beginning to experiment and innovate, adopt new management structures. And the partnership schools in New York City, I think, are one of those institutions that is operating under a management structure that's different from what we see in a lot of traditional Catholic schools where it's run by the parish or it's run by the diocese. Can you help us understand, I guess, what makes the structure of the partnership schools unique, and then what advantages does that have in terms of academic excellence?
So here in New York, just to give you a little background, our organization has had a 20-year history of supporting Catholic education, so we did not come to this without a lot of experience. And the way it happened was that our donors were looking maybe 5 or 6 years ago at how they could kind of go deeper and work with fewer schools and do more to bring them towards academic excellence. And it was sort of this perfect storm here at the Archdiocese, where the Archdiocese was transitioning to a new governance model that went away from pastor governance of schools into a regional model. And so at that time, it was sort of this idea one of our trustees had, well, maybe we could have a region to manage and work with. And that evolved after a couple years of negotiating to this contract. We are a contracted service with the Archdiocese, which is unique. They've never done this before. And our contract allows us full authority, management authority, and control over curriculum, leadership, the school buildings, the administrative, finance, everything on the schools, in exchange for us fully funding the schools. So the Archdiocese still owns the schools technically, but we are managing the schools under this contract that's about 11-year term. The second part of your question, I guess, is what the advantages are. So what we see as the main advantage is that we've taken schools that were independently sort of being run and pulled them together into a network, which we think has a lot of strength in that we are all operating with one vision, one mission. We are, you know, for instance, putting in curriculum that is the same at all of those schools. In some cases, archdiocese, all schools may be running their own curriculum. And again, network advantages are what we can do centrally to really help the schools. So there's a lot of advantages in our structure that are allowing us to make change and to bring excellence rather quickly to the schools.
So it seems like perhaps there's some parallels between your model and what happens in a lot of charter school networks, where you have schools that are working together. If one administrator really figures out how to get success in reading, they can pass that on to the other members of the network. But then also the network has some level of freedom to operate. And as you mentioned, the diocese owns the schools, but sort of the educational organization has some freedom of movement.
Right.
And so I guess what I'm wondering is, how were you able to put that structure in place? What was it that convinced church leaders to sort of create this unique arrangement?
Well, I think part of it was our experience. We had already been doing the work, and I think we were a familiar face to the Archdiocese. And also, I really have to credit Cardinal Dolan. He was was given this opportunity, and he has said things in other venues about how he has to cast out to the deep, that, you know, he can't just do one thing. He has to try more than one thing in order to see what may work. And I think he was open and is open to another approach and something unique and something different. I think it's hard for, and sometimes the archdiocese to see something being done for a small set of schools that can't be necessarily done for all. But what I think he was able to understand was that that could be a win, and that could let all the boats rise if we were successful. And we really can be a proof point. And I think that was a big part of why he decided to support us and continues to.
So there's, I think, two dynamics that are helping to propel the Catholic school renaissance. I'm referring to the sort of fear of closure, the fact that there are Catholic schools that are shuttering all over the country, and there's a desire to reverse that trend. And then on the other hand, the calling, it's embedded in church teaching. It's a longstanding tradition of serving the poor and educating the poor and doing that well and really providing these vital community institutions. Are those two of the motivating factors in the church's decision to sort of create this arrangement?
Yes, I think they both are motivating factors. And in fact, I take it even further to say that we feel Catholic school turnarounds can succeed because of that, where others have failed. And I would add to both the calling and the fear of closure, the sort of, you know, way the church is operated, which is, you know, most decisions can be made best at the local level. So that's how we're operating and allowing a lot of decision-making, you know, to go down to the level of our principals and our deans. And also, I think that what set us up for success has been the fact that we don't have the battle scars of 20 years of education reform the way public and charter schools have. So our teachers and leadership are really open to our message and to the new curriculum and the coaching and professional development that we've provided. And so there are a lot of factors, and you gave two, that really do make Catholic school turnaround possible, different, and we think effective.
When you talk about being ripe for turnaround, we have 20 years of headlines on how difficult it is to turn around public schools that are struggling academically, especially. What's your sense of the differences in public school turnarounds versus Catholic school turnarounds? Are there aspects of Catholic school that lend themselves to being turned around?
Definitely, yes. Again, the mission and the deep roots in the community is bedrock of where we start. So when you start with a group of people who are very dedicated to their students, they're already mission aligned. They're already part of this fabric of a community that's been built over time. So adding the things we're adding, which are really things that they're hungry for and excited about. We have, for instance, 40-year veteran teacher who has seen her test scores go from 20 to 40 to 60% passing because of materials and professional development and a sort of higher bar that we're showing everyone in order to just do better for students. And we haven't wholesale taken out everyone and replaced them. We're really working with a lot of folks that have been there, and because they've been there and they have that mission alignment, we are able to succeed where I think you can't necessarily do that in public school.
So can you help us understand sort of what work was like for that teacher maybe, say, 5 years ago and how that has begun to change?
You know, these schools had, over the years, I think, really become under-resourced. We found our teachers were, first of all, using different curriculum across all the schools, which made it, you know, very inconsistent. And also they just had to sort of grab what they could. So they almost had to be curriculum developers because they had to take something from the internet and take something from a book they had and take something from another place. They had to do a lot of work, and then they had to teach it all. And they didn't necessarily have a coherent and sequenced curriculum that went from grade to grade throughout their school. And so by us taking all of that development off their plate, we're able to deliver them a curriculum that we know is aligned to the standard and a curriculum that others are using and that we're improving along the way. Another thing I'll say is that our teachers weren't necessarily, number one, seeing interim results on assessments that they could then use to drive their instruction. So there wasn't as much data-driven instruction happening. And secondly, they weren't getting active and regular feedback on their practice. And by giving our principals an academic dean and an operations manager, which allows them to now really focus on their teachers, our teachers are getting regular feedback all the time. So there's someone coming in their classroom to observe, and then they're talking about practice, and they're making it better. Principals in the past, let's say 5 years ago, had to wear every hat, and they had to fix the boiler and call on someone who wasn't paying tuition. They couldn't be in the classroom, and they couldn't do that kind of work. Our teachers are embracing it. They're happy to be working together on getting better.
So in other words, then teachers are more focused on, are able to focus more on what's going on in their classroom. They don't have to worry about curriculum development as much, because that's, the network is helping with that. And then the principals don't have to be the CEO and maybe the facilities manager and the business manager. They can really focus on being the educator in chief, so to speak.
Exactly.
So now, I know that it's not just that one teacher you were talking about that has seen significant improvements. You all this summer had some pretty significant results that came out that basically showed that there were proficiency improvements that occurred across the board in public schools and in charter schools in New York, but that the partnership schools, they took that same assessment as those kids and actually improved more quickly. And so what I'm wondering then is, what kind of a signal do you think that sends to policymakers or to philanthropists who are out there and they're looking at an urban education environment where you have efforts to improve the public schools? You have, particularly in New York, you have some very high profile, high performing charter school networks. Now you also have Catholic schools. How do Catholic schools fit into that mix, and how should they fit into that mix?
Well, I think what we're able to prove and show is that Catholic schools can be a choice, an excellent choice for parents in these neighborhoods. And we end up being the third leg of the stool. We can bring the excellence to the point where we are part of the education reform conversation. We're part of the dialogue. We are another option. It's not just a two-sided charter and public school conversation. And in fact, you know, us having in 2 years better gains that were much faster than the charter schools, I think that brings us respect and it brings us attention from funders and policymakers, because that will hopefully help us make the case for school choice in New York and other states, but also show that these schools are an excellent option and are worthy of choice from the parents. So we just want to bring Catholic schools back into the conversation as a serious third option. And we have many funders who fund Catholic, charter, and public schools. And so it sort of, I think, makes the case to our funders to be part of that tri-sector approach, because it's about disadvantaged kids in these neighborhoods that need a place to go. And if they can't get into their local charter school, we want to be that other option for them.
So now, and when we look nationally, I think charter schools are something that if you're a big donor or a big philanthropist or even a state legislator somewhere, you've got a pretty good idea at this point how a charter school works. It's getting a certain amount of taxpayer funding per student. There's a standardized test that all their students are taking, so you can really see whether your investment is paying off or not. Are Catholic schools or faith-based schools more generally able to sort of demonstrate those same things where you're able to show the results you're getting?
Yes. What we're trying to show is certainly the results that compete with the best schools. But the economics are obviously very different. The one thing to point out is that, you know, last year we spent about $8,500 per pupil on our kids. And we were doing that at a fraction of the cost. The charters are spending about 16,000 a student. The public schools are spending 22,000 a student here in New York. So what we're seeing is we have an efficiency in delivering an education at a lower price point. That being said, our parents don't make up that entire cost per student. They only make up about 2,500 of that cost. And so the rest is philanthropy and a very small amount of government funding, which we have to grow the philanthropy over time in order to serve our kids and more, and tax credits or vouchers wherever, you know, public funds could come in would then be the long-term solution to do what's been done in Florida, which is, you know, be that lifeline for those schools and financially allow them to be sustainable for the long term. But for now, it's philanthropy. And we know there are many donors who see our efficiency and see the results both academically and character and faith-wise that is worth the investment.
You mentioned that you all are more efficient with the amount of funding that you receive compared to many public schools. I imagine part of that might be because of parents who pay tuition or pay a portion of their tuition, but part of that, as you mentioned, is from operations that are more efficient. What is it that makes your school's operations more efficient? Do the ties to the church play a role?
Well, I think traditionally Catholic schools have always done more with less. Mm-hmm. And I think we start there, but not with so much less. I mean, we don't want it to be so much less that you actually can't, deliver on your promise to the students and the families. So I think we've started adding our resources very strategically. We're not throwing everything. We're really choosing very, very carefully. We're building carefully our team and what the resources are. And we're focused a lot on our curriculum and using that curriculum and the materials we're creating around it and the professional development we're providing as the real sort of cornerstone of the effort. So I think what we're trying to do is be strategic and not try to be everything to everyone. We're trying to really use curriculum as a driver for what we think can move the needle academically.
Since you have in Harlem and the Bronx and among the students that you serve a high population of low-income families, are there things you do in particular to support those students or to help those students really get caught up academically?
We're assuming every kid can learn. We're trying to, again, use the curriculum as the driver. We keep the students on track with that curriculum, and we haven't created supports other than we've extended our school day, so they actually get more time on task. We provide, homework help and have after-school programs that give students some extra support, but we haven't created any major sort of remedial programs. We're just trying to deliver the curriculum, which we think actually will be all the students need with some of these sort of supports around the edges at the moment.
We touched on, I think, a little bit the sort of traditions of the church. Now, I guess it was the beginning of last school year, you all received a visit from Pope Francis, and he has been, I think he has publicly mentioned before that he wants Catholic schools to serve low-income students and really focus on that mission. Does the fact that you have sort of the top leaders of the church really calling attention to the importance of urban Catholic schooling, does that trickle down into the local parishes, into the archdiocese? Is that something that you think is energizing folks throughout the church to improve Catholic schooling, increase access for low-income students?
We were beyond thrilled to have the Pope visit Our Lady Queen of Angels, one of our schools. It really gave us an opportunity to shine a light on our unique model and our work, which was wonderful. And it did impact, I think, all the way down from, families who wanted to enroll their child at that school. They got full first. They are full, which is great. And even down to the students who wrote him notes afterward, and who there was, I guess, later that year there had been an Ecuadorian earthquake, and students from the school or collected money. They raised $2,500. They don't have a lot of it themselves, but they did made the donation in honor of Pope Francis, who had personally asked them to take care of others when he was in that school. So, yes, I think there's been a positive and a really wonderful kind of timing of his visit and his message and his entrepreneurial spirit to the work we're doing and to the Archdiocese as a whole. We thought it was definitely divine intervention that he came to one of the partnership schools. It was wonderful.
To sort of connect that and bring that back around to the issue of philanthropy, you mentioned some of your supporters are the folks who would support urban charter schools as well, and they're in other words, they're sort of investing in school improvement and a better system of schools, and they're being sort of sector agnostic about that investment. They're supporting private schools, public schools, charter schools. What I wonder is, are there other folks who support your schools who maybe would only invest in Catholic education? And so are you able to sort of bring new energy or new support or new funding that charter schools just might not attract?
Yes. I mean, there are definitely funders who are Catholic-oriented who are energized and excited about our model and some of the other things happening around the country that have and will continue to traditionally invest in Catholic schools. And so we've actually brought on some new funders that were Catholic school funders that hadn't considered our model or investing, let's say, in New York City's Catholic schools before. It's been great for us to have some of those new players, come to us. I think that the charter school funding world is probably a lot bigger. So while we're trying to get access as much as we can to those who have a natural affinity for what we're doing, we are also trying to appeal to donors that do fund charters and other kinds of schools. You know, for instance, our board chair is a supporter of charter schools, but and he's not Catholic, and he is, like you said, agnostic to what delivery system. He just cares about New York City and providing educational opportunity.